a large portion of the book that are very specific instructions from a father to a son. In fact, the phrase, "my son," occurs 23 times in the New American Standard. That's quite a few times in such a short book. In other words, there are certain subjects that Solomon and the other writers of these Proverbs wanted to stress, and so I will be emphasizing those things as a framework upon which the other things that are mentioned in Proverbs can be placed. Now, this emphasis on a father's instruction to a son does not in any way diminish the importance of the mother. In fact, look at verse 8. How does he even start off this? He says, "Hear, my son, your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, there are graceful wreaths to your head and ornaments about your neck." So it takes both parents. And while God has certainly been gracious and merciful, and there are many examples of where one parent has had to raise the children because their other parent is absent, ideally, it's both parents actively involved in rearing that child. In addition, while some of these teachings are very specific to sons, the principles, the precepts within it, actually apply to daughters as well. So there's something here for everybody today. So if you're a lady, you got to pay attention. If you're a daughter, you also have to pay attention, not just dads and sons. Actively learn from Proverbs. If you're a child, too, learn to listen to your parents, heed what they have to say. They really do have your best interests at heart. They may not know everything, but that is their goal. Parents desire their children to succeed. And so you need to hear and heed what they have to say. Actively listen to them. Don't forsake those lessons. Now, God has given to parents the responsibility to teach the next generation about himself and the manner of life and how we should live. We live in a society in which a lot of those responsibilities, in fact, I think most of those responsibilities, are increasingly giving to some other entity other than the parents. And parents often are very willingly agreeing to shove off their responsibilities to somebody else. In fact, I would not be surprised if a majority of parents in this nation now believe that churches have the responsibility to teach the children about God. Amen. That schools are to teach them all their academic skills. That government is responsible to provide for them. And social workers are there to ensure that they're cared for. Now, all those responsibilities belong to who? The parent. The parents have those responsibilities. Now, outside entities can assist the family, but the responsibility still comes back upon the parent because God holds the parent responsible for their children. And we need to be very aware of that. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9, one of the most direct commands concerning this. Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 4. This is the Shema. If you have a Jewish background or you know Jewish folks, they have what they will wear in the frontals, the things that wrap around their wrist or forehead or on their door. What's inside here is these first couple verses. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is our God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." But he doesn't stop there, because this is Moses' plan for the success of the nation in the land, and it's all dependent upon the parents. He says, "And these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." So there's where the tradition comes from. Ephesians 6:4 points Christians back to the same truth. We are to bring up our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, or the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, the church can certainly help with instructing your children and teach them about God. But notice what the passage talks about is, where will your children learn the most about God? In the daily life. It's what you as parents have as responsibility. Teach them in every situation of life. When you rise up, when you go to bed. When you're sitting in your house, when you're going by the way. You look for every opportunity to point out God's hand in things. To teach them about God, His nature, His character, and their responsibilities to Him and His commandments. So a church can't do that. We're not with your kids every moment of the day. We see them a little bit here and there. That's it. You as the parents have that responsibility. A school can help teach your children some academics, but it's up to you to make sure they understand the lesson and, more importantly, know how to apply that lesson in life. You need to help them understand what is true and what is false, because you're also going to learn a lot of false things in our school systems now too, right? You as a parent have the responsibility to help them with that. It is up to you, not the government, to provide for your children. Now, if you need and receive help, then understand it is charity, regardless of the source, whether it's private or governmental funding. It is charity. That's the proper word for it. And we accept that with humility and gratitude, and then use those resources wisely while striving to be able to stand on our own 2 feet so we can help others again. That goes actually to Timothy. We work so we can provide for ourselves and have enough surplus to help others. That's our goal. That's why we work. So that's what we're striving to do. Now, law enforcement, including social workers, are needed because we are sinful. And the sinfulness of and someone checking. But remember, society has set the standards. God sets the standards for our beliefs, for behavior. And that's what we're striving for as Christians, to know what God wants and do it His way. Now that brings us back to Proverbs, because it's such practical application of these truths in daily life and how we can live in a way that's pleasing to God. So parents are responsible for every aspect of rearing the child, but we also understand that parents are limited. No parent has everything together. We have limitations in areas. There's something we don't understand. Or we just don't have the ability to do something. A lot of different factors there. In those areas, we get others to help us overcome those limitations. But even in those things, it's the parent's responsibility to oversee and direct the child in what the child is learning. Why? I'll give maybe it's a silly illustration. Your children are learning some musical instrument. We'll pick one that maybe no one's learning. Oboe. Anybody here play oboe? That's why I'm kind of picking it. All right, so you can't teach your child how to play oboe. Are you responsible for how your child learns to play oboe? Yeah, you're still. Why? Because even in something as simple as that, it's character development. And that's your first and your priority. You as the parent are training their character. So something even like music lessons is training the character of the child. It's not just accomplishing a skill. There's character development that's going all the way along. That's your responsibility. That's why parents are to teach their children about God's commands in every life situation. From the time you get up to the time you go to bed, whether in your house, walking along the way, be diligent to teach your children to love God and follow His commands. So we go to Proverbs for help in this. Now, Psalm 127:3 states, "Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." Psalm 128, verse 4, actually refers to children as a blessing to the man who fears the Lord. However, whether a child is a blessing or a curse depends on whether the child becomes wise or becomes solidified in their foolishness. Consider some of these Proverbs. Proverbs 10, verse 1. And we're going to be bouncing all over Proverbs this morning. Proverbs 10, 1. "A wise son makes a father glad, but a foolish son is a grief to his mother." Proverbs 17, verse 25. "A foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him." You see, the problem for our parents is that every child comes to us, we bring them home, and what we have brought into our homes are little sinners. Okay? That's how they come. I've mentioned this before. Diane's background with her mother coming out of Christian Science, she had this idea that Jonathan, when we brought him home, was this innocent little baby. And I said, he's a sinner. She agreed with me within just a couple days. Didn't take long. That's how they come. And Proverbs 22:15 tells us that foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. So we have a task as parents is to help them overcome the foolishness that is naturally there because they have a sin nature. David said of himself in Psalm 51:5, and this is true for all of us, "Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother conceived me." No, it's not referring to his mother had an illicit relationship. His mother was married to the father, so that's not the problem. It's that we come into life as sinners. That's what he's referring at. Paul explained in Ephesians 2:3, we are by nature children of wrath. So if parents are not diligent in training their children according to God's commands, then that foolishness that's bound up in the heart of a child only increases. You get to the teenage years and they become rebellious. They want what they want. They want to do what their friends want, not what you want. They identify with other people rather than your family. That can solidify into becoming foolish adults. If they live long enough, they become old fools. Many of us have run into such people. But the greater tragedy is if they die in that state, they're a fool for eternity. And so Proverbs gives very strong warnings about such fools. Proverbs 20:20 states this, "He who curses his father or his mother, his lamp will go out in time of darkness." How many of you have heard young children cursing and cussing their parents in public? I have. It doesn't take long to just go out in the supermarket or the mall or something, and you will hear it now. Proverbs 19:26 says, "He who assaults his father and drives his mother away is a shameful and disgraceful son." The verbal assaults of these young kids become physical assaults as they get older. It's not hard to find parents anymore that are physically afraid of their children. Proverbs 28:24 says, "He who robs his father or his mother and says it's not a transgression is the companion of a man who destroys." That's strong terms. We're not talking about pilfering cookies from the cookie jar. We're talking about those children who have gotten older and they are robbing their parents and don't have even a twinge in their conscience about it. Some of you have siblings that have done it to your parents despite your objections. Then there's Proverbs 30, verse 17. "The eye that mocks a father and scorns a mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it." I don't think that is the end any of us wish for our children. But as Proverbs 30, verse 11 states, "There's a kind of man who curses his father, does not bless his mother." The Mosaic law required that such a person, those who would curse a father or a mother, were to be put to death, they would be executed. Exodus 21:17, Leviticus 20, verse 9. It required it. So if you want your children to bless you instead of curse you, then you have to be diligent in rearing them to love God and God's ways. You must be diligent to discipline your children. Now, discipline, we sometimes think of as just negative, but actually most of discipline is positive. Discipline is another word for training. It includes teaching, it includes reproof, correction, and instruction. You explain them what they need to know and how to do it. And if they do it right, you praise them. If they do it wrong, you admonish them, you did it wrong. You correct them, you tell them how to do it right and show them what they did wrong. And then you give them further instruction how to make sure they don't go back and do it wrong again, but we'll do it right. And we're patient with that, always working with our kids, because they are going to do it wrong. They don't know how. So we do all those things. We teach them, we reprove them, we correct them, we instruct them. And children need a father's discipline. And blessings come when they heed it, but if they don't, tragedy follows. Consider these proverbs. Proverbs 13, verse 1. "A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke." So those kids are here. If you're wise, you will listen. If you're not, expect there's going to be a rebuke at some point. Proverbs 15:5, a fool rejects his father's discipline, but he who regards reproof is prudent. So you're going to be a fool, or are you going to be someone who's prudent? Proverbs 19:27, cease listening, my son, to discipline, and you will stray from the words of knowledge. You're going into ignorance. Realize as well that as you teach your children to obey you, you're also training them to become obedient to God. And that will allow them to experience all the blessings that come with that. If you do not teach your children to obey you, you are teaching them to sin, to disobey you and to disobey God, and with that comes all the curses. And that's the reason for these strong warnings throughout Proverbs. For example, Proverbs 19:18 says, discipline your son while there is hope. Do not desire his death. So that those parents that think that they're doing better by not disciplining their kids, they're cruel. Actually, what they're wishing for, or what they will gain, is their death. And while proper discipline, again, is mostly positive, because it's in teaching, instructing, and training, discipline may also require physical chastening. And when that is done correctly, it is an act of love. I remember one year I was putting Proverbs up out on the sign. I put a lot of different things up there. I shouldn't say I put them up there. I write them out, and Joe and Marianne have now for years been going out there, which I really appreciate, especially in the winter when you can't even hold it, your hands are cold, but they put the stuff in the sign. I put Proverbs 13:24 up there. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. And I actually had a man come in and come into my office and try and chew me out for it. And I said, you know, started talking with him. Do you understand Scripture at all? You have any value for Scripture? He claims to be a Christian. I said, then go read Proverbs. Because he was going to take me to task about this proverb. Now, we're going to talk more about this whole aspect of discipline and how to do that with your children later, because I'm going to preach on the principles of parenting from Proverbs in the future. But at this point, just understand that it is critical that you diligently discipline your children, all aspects of it, because that is an act of love. And a child who is wise, or at least desires to be wise, is going to accept and learn from the discipline of their parents. That's part of the lesson of learning from your errors, too. Proverbs 3, verse 11, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord, or loathe his reproof, for whom the Lord loves, he reproves. Even as a father, the son in whom he delights. So the wise dad disciplines diligently, and in doing so, reflects God's own love for us. That's a wonderful thing. At least it should be. So what are some of the things that Proverbs specifically says to dads about training their children? The very first specific instruction is in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. And then the passage goes down to verse 19. But it says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. The passage then goes on to describe some of the very specific activities these sinners will do. And then verse 15, Solomon adds, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. Now, it may surprise some dads to learn that not only do you have the right to be involved in whom your children choose as friends, you have a responsibility to be involved. The end of the passage, verse 19, even warns that those who do walk in the way of such sinners, they risk their life. So it's actually a serious issue. Now, when your children grow up and they move out, your influence on whom they choose as friends is going to diminish. But that still doesn't mean it doesn't have an effect on you. It will. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't be involved. You need to be, and you may just be in strong warnings if they're choosing badly. Do you realize that if they choose well, your children choose well, you get blessed? But if your children choose terrible friends, well, you get a curse. Proverbs 28:7, he who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. So, any of you who are rebellious, you really want to humiliate your father, pick bad friends. Problem is that you really suffer for that a lot worse than he does. He's humiliated, but you're on the path to death. Do you see there's a serious nature here? Proverbs 23, verses 15 through 21, gives a more detailed explanation of this. It goes on and says this, my son, If your heart is wise, my own heart will also be glad, and my inmost being will rejoice. When your lips speak what is right, do not let your heart envy sinners, but live in the fear of the Lord always. Surely there is a future, and your hope will not be cut off. Listen, my son, and be wise. Direct your heart in the way. Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. In a similar way, Proverbs 29, verse 3 warns that he who keeps company with harlots wastes his wealth. Proverbs 5, 6, and 7, three chapters, all give very strong warnings about the multiple dangers of the seductress, the harlot, and the adulteress. And we'll be examining that in a future sermon as well. Today I'm only giving as a warning of that whole category of sinners. Stay away from them. Avoid them. They will drag you down. Did you know that Proverbs even warns about fickle people? Proverbs 24, verse 21, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those who are given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin that will come from both of them. If your friends are that fickle, you might want to find some better friends. Dads, you have a responsibility. Help direct your children in choosing their friends. And all the things I talked about earlier in this series about friendships apply here. So pick up the copies of that sermon. They're online, or ask and we'll make a CD or print out the notes for you. All the Proverbs up friendship. There's four sermons in that series. Encourage the development of your children and having godly friends, the kind of friends that are going to be helpful to them in walking in wisdom. Train your children to be that kind of friend. And while you want to be generous and you want your children to be learned to be generous, you want them to reach out with God's love to sinners, at the same time, you have to discourage them from developing close friends with such people. And that's not an easy balance, but it's a very necessary one. I reach out to sinners, but they are not people who should be influencing me. I should influence them. It should be a one-way street here. Now, if the kids are still in your home, you have the right to forbid the continuing development of those friendships. If they're out of your home, you can still give strong warnings to them and the dangers into which they're falling. Go back to Proverbs. Point them out to them. Be the watchman on the wall of having a concern for your kids and where they may go because of their friends. So that was the first specific. Avoid sinful friendships. Avoid those relationships that are going to entice you into sin yourself. The second instruction we find in Proverbs from a father to a son is for him to seek out, listen to, and heed wisdom. Proverbs chapters 2, 3, and 4 all deal with this subject. There are blessings in walking with wisdom. Starting in chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, it says, my son, if you will receive my sayings and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. And the rest of the chapter goes on to explain the blessings of discerning the fear of the Lord. Now remember what the theme of Proverbs is? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Dad, you have a responsibility to teach your children to fear the Lord so they can receive the blessings that come from that. Now, how do you do that? Well, it begins with you loving the Lord yourself. And then it continues as you teach them about God, His commandments, just as we read earlier in Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. It's on your heart, and you transfer it to your children. So learn the Scriptures. Teach them the Scriptures and the application of them in every aspect of daily life. Proverbs 3 then goes on and continues to explain some of the specific blessings that come with walking in wisdom in the ways of the Lord. And the first is actually a long and peaceful life. Proverbs 3, verse 1. My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments, for the length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Now, as a parent, that's what I want for my children, a long and peaceful life for them. Other blessings in that chapter include this. Verse 4, you find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. Verse 6, God makes your path straight. Verse 8, there is healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. Verse 10, there's prosperity. Verses 23 through 26, there's security. There's no fear. All those things come from teaching them to walk in wisdom in fear of the Lord. Proverbs 4 then continues the same theme. Hear, O sons, this is verse 1, hear, O sons, the instruction of the Father. Give attention that you may gain understanding, for I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and he said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her and she will guard you. Love her and she will watch with you. The passage is strong and it gives you the sense of both the importance and the urgency of teaching your children to walk in wisdom. Now, perhaps some might object they can't teach their children wisdom because they're not wise yet themselves. All right, that's a valid objection, but it's a terrible excuse. Yes, the wisdom must be in your own heart first. We understand that from Deuteronomy. These words from command you shall be in your own heart and you shall teach them. But if it is not there, then why are you not acquiring it? Remember right at the beginning of the series in Proverbs, we talked about wisdom. She shouts to everybody, she calls, and she invites. Heed the invitation. Seek out wisdom. And then lead your children. Do you realize that in order to lead, you only have to be in front of the person you're leading? That's it. You just have to be in front. You don't have to be a long way in front, you just have to be in front. I remember we had, when I was in college, the professor of pomology, the fruit trees, retired rather quickly, much to the surprise of the whole staff. So it fell to one of the professors that I had gotten to know very well to teach a pomology class. He didn't know much about pomology. So he spent a lot of time every night poring over all these books on pomology so he could teach the lesson the next day. He became the professor of pomology. Continued to teach that for years after I had left. But he was able to successfully teach the class because he was still always at least one step ahead of his students. Dads, that's all you really need to be. At least one step. Now, hopefully a lot farther, but at least one step. So you don't have the wisdom. Seek the wisdom and teach it to your children. And as you continue to grow in wisdom, keep teaching your children. You see the point? And we should always be doing that. Now, you may not have all the answers. In fact, I guarantee you, you don't have all the answers because you still have sin. And you will not reach perfection in this life. But that's not an excuse for not being out in front of your children. Lead the way. If you stumble, be honest about it. Seek forgiveness from the Lord and also forgiveness from those you've harmed. And then press on. That perseverance is part of the nature of wisdom and that you want to pass on to your kids. They will learn it by watching you. Don't be a quitter even before you start. Never quit after you start. Press on and be among those who can say along with Proverbs chapter 4, verses 20 through 23, my son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all the whole body. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Now you may be learning the lessons one step in front of them, but if you're diligent and you're faithful in teaching your children what you have learned, you will also be able to say what it says in Proverbs 4, 10, 11. And notice the tense of the words used here. Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and years of life, and the years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. Let that be a past tense. You've accomplished it as your children grow. I want to mention one other thing here when talking about wisdom, and it's something I've noticed in the last couple of decades that has been a very foolish mindset developed among parents in which they believe that if they have failed in some area of life, they are somehow disqualified from teaching their children in that area. Maybe you've noticed this too. They don't seem to want to hold them accountable anymore. The most common two areas have been concerning drugs and fornication. Let me be the point blank about this idea. It is idiotic and one of the more stupid things that's ever come out. Now think about it just logically. If you have failed in some area in your past, you know the damage it causes. I can't think of anybody who'd be more strong on the issue than someone who's had failure and suffered for it in teaching their own children, do not go this direction. I've been there. You don't want to go there. Learn from my mistakes. Okay? I can't think of more strong, who could be more strong in that than someone who has already suffered for it. And yet we have a lot of people who think, well, you know, I did drugs as a kid, and I can't say anything. Yes, you can, and you need to. You must. For the sake of your children, do it. You just have to be humble and honest about it, but perhaps that's where the problem lies. People hang on to their pride, and so they won't admit their failures to their children. Let me give you reveal a secret that all your children know about you that maybe you don't realize they know. They know you sin too. They know you fail. So just be humble about it. Apologize for your failures and say, I'm working on it too. God is working in my life. That becomes part of the lesson of life, doesn't it? Then there are some that hold some perverted worldview that either they don't recognize or refuse to admit that they had any harm from that sin. Well, in that case, as Christians, our understanding of purpose of manner and manner of life, it comes from God's revelations in Scripture. It does not come from either our own personal experience or those of others. When God says there's harm whether you recognize it or not. So dads, be diligent. Lead your children in God's wisdom, not in the false wisdom of the world. Let Proverbs 23:22-25 be the instructions and call that you call your children to. It says, listen to your father who begot you. Do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy truth and do not sell it. Get wisdom, instruction, understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice. He who begats a wise son will be glad in him. Let your father and your mother be glad. Let her rejoice who gave birth to you. Children, work at that so your parents can be glad. Now, there are a few other things in Proverbs that are very specific. Avoiding sinners and foolishness and seeking wisdom are general areas of instruction of a father to his son. And I point out a few of the specifics are within that. But Proverbs is filled with many specific things over a very wide range of topics in advocating walking wisdom and warning about the foolishness and the consequences of foolishness. Now, all those things are areas that we as fathers have responsibility in training our children. Or if you're working with kids, you still have a responsibility there, even if you're not a dad. But there are a few more passages in Proverbs in which a father specifically addresses his son about a subject I want to point out before I conclude the sermon. Now, I already pointed out that in Proverbs 5, 6, and 7, the father is warning his son about the seductress, the harlot, and the adulteress. And again, we're going to cover that in detail in a future sermon. Proverbs 23:15-20 and 31:2-5 warn about the dangers of drinking and having drinking friends. And I already mentioned one of those passages as one of the kinds of friends you don't want to have. You don't want to have hard drinking friends. You don't want to have gluttonous friends. Why? Because our tendency is to get involved with whatever friends get involved in, and pretty soon you'll be in the same camp with them. And it warns there are dangers here. All right? Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat, for the heavy drinkers and the glutton will come to poverty. Parents don't want their children to go to poverty, and you don't want to go to poverty. But that's a danger there. Drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Now, since we tend to get involved, we want to be careful with our friends. So that was the first warning of it. But I also want to go on because Proverbs has a couple other things to say about this. And I'm not going to give everything here because this is one of the vices I will cover in a future sermon as well. But understand, dads, that Proverbs is clear that there is a danger here. And you need to make sure your children understand it. Proverbs 20, verse 1 warns, wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler. Whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. So don't take it lightly. It is a mocker that easily leads to foolishness. And if you don't have your children up to speed on this, they will be led astray. Because that's the nature of it. Be very careful. It's not a sin to have a glass of wine. But understand, there is a great danger here as well. Understand the risk. Interesting enough, Proverbs 31, 2 through 5 gives an additional warning. And this is actually a mother to a son, the mother of the king to her son who is the king. It says this, "What, O my son, and what, O son of my womb, and what, O son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women or your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to drink strong drink, lest they drink and forget what is decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted." So the king was specifically admonished here, avoid wine, avoid strong drink, lest they pervert his ability to think and he ends up rendering an improper judgment. Now that's serious, because it would have very damaging consequences to other people. Now, you may not be a king. In fact, I know you're not a king. We don't have any kings here. But you have responsibilities. And you have responsibilities over the decisions and the actions you take. And when those things affect others, it becomes a serious issue. What are you doing and how is that affecting others? We don't live in isolation. None of us do. So again, Dad, you have to be very careful about what you teach your children regarding alcoholic drinks, lest you lead them into foolishness instead of wisdom. That's the warning. Okay, and we'll cover this again in more detail because Proverbs actually says a whole lot more about it. But it's a warning, and we should heed it. Be careful. Now, finances are another topic that actually has a very specific warning from a father to a son. And there's a lot in Proverbs about finances. And again, it's another subject we will cover in detail in the future. You can see why this series keeps getting longer. But Proverbs 6, 1 through 5 does record this father's specific instruction to his son concerning surety. That's taking responsibility to guarantee someone else's debt. A very dangerous thing to do. In our society, we usually call this co-signing for a loan or for a debt. Very dangerous. You must be careful. But here's what the father warns his son. Proverbs 6, 1. "My son, if you become surety for your neighbor, have given a pledge for a stranger, if you become snared with the words of your mouth, have been caught with the words of your mouth, do this, my son, and deliver yourself. Since you have come into the hand of your neighbor, go, humble yourself and importune your neighbor. Do not give sleep to your eyes nor slumber to your eyelids. Deliver yourself like the gazelle from the hunter's hand and like a bird from the hand of the fowler." In other words, get out of it. Do everything you can. Don't sleep. Figure a way out of what you just did. It was stupid. Okay? Now, that brings in the whole area of finances. This very strong admonition, avoid the surety, get out of it. Be careful about your finances and what you put yourself at risk for. Dads, you have responsibility. Teach your children about being financially wise. So often I see parents, they handle all the finance for the kids. They get to be 18 or so and then suddenly go out and do what you want. And the kid has no idea how to handle their finances. And no wonder they make a mess of things. You have responsibility to train them to be able to handle their finances, so they can be successful. Now, if you're not financially wise yourself, then take a crash course in it, become wise, and teach your children how to handle money. Okay? Get it together yourself. Now, that's not an easy task in a hedonistic, materialistic society, and so it even takes more diligence. But it's another area that we have responsibility about as fathers. As parents, are we teaching our children to be financially sound and not give in to this, the Madison Avenue approach that will sell you anything? I mean, how often, you know what garage sales are? They're the success of the marketer, because there's all this stuff these people bought that they finally realize they don't need and don't want. And now it's a great place to go pick up bargains, quote unquote, but now all you've done is transfer it from their garage to your garage and still sits in the garage. Train your children to handle finances. They're not led astray. And finally, I want to mention two additional proverbs, which I found very interesting when I got to them. They advocate generational faithfulness to friends and promises. Proverbs 27:10, the very first part of it says, "Do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend." That's an interesting statement. Dads, as your children grow up, are you teaching them to be friends with your friends? You see, there is a generational responsibility here. Now, as you get older, the importance to have friendships with those who are younger becomes more important. It's important for the young ones from the standpoint that they learn a lot of wisdom from being around older people. But there's also a benefit that you gain as you get older. They can help you do things you can't do anymore. Okay? Family friends should be multi-generational. And I'll admit, I will brag here, I guess, in somewhat. It pleases me very much to see that my sons have taken an interest in my generation, even the generation above me. And they have received great blessing and wisdom by learning from those who are older, and even those older than me. And now that they're adults, what a treasure they are, because they can go and help those that, you know what, it's a little strenuous with those with gray hair. We just can't quite do it the way we used to. And some young buck coming in who's got lots of energy that needs to be burned on something anyways, let them get to it. And they help. Right? You do that a lot, don't you, Jimmy? Yeah, he does. So there's a multi-generational friendship. Teach them to do that. Show it yourself. But that's important. And then there was another proverb, Proverbs 22:28. It says this: "Do not move the ancient boundary which your fathers have set." Now, that may not make a whole lot of sense at the beginning, but you have to start thinking about it. You have property. The fathers, the generations prior, have agreed on where the property line is, and they're abiding by it. The next generation comes. What happens if somebody moves the property boundary? Well, for one thing, they're stealing somebody else's land, and they're not upholding the promises that have been made in previous generations. That's now allowing them to steal. So there is a sense here where there needs to be a faithfulness to the promises made between previous generations. Dads, teach your children the importance of not only keeping their word, but holding fast the promises you have made as well. A couple of generations ago, this was commonly done. Even if the dad wasn't wise with money and ended with debt, the next generation would pick it up and say, "I will pay this off for the honor of my parents." And that was just normal life. Now we just want to forget it. There is generational promises, and it's part of the integrity of keeping them. It's part of the heritage that you should pass down of having your children have a character of very high integrity and honor. And remember, dads, while each of your children are going to have their own individual personality, along with all their strengths and weaknesses, you are the one who is responsible for training their character. It's just one more area of their training. Now, a sermon going over all these responsibilities can be intimidating or exhilarating, depending on how you're up to the challenge. My hope is that you're spurred on to the challenge, not to weigh you down, but there's a goal in mind. We can reach that goal, guys. We can achieve it. Why? Because God doesn't leave us alone. He has given us a wonderful privilege of having children. And you start thinking about it, what a marvelous thing that He's entrusted to us the development of another human being. And yes, He will hold us responsible, but He's there working with us. As He said in Philippians 1, "He who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete in the day of Christ." He is working through us to accomplish the things He says He wants us to do. So we get to see God at work through us in our children. That is a great privilege. And so when you get frustrated, you don't have to be that frustrated. You say, "God, I'm waiting to see how you're going to work through this one, because I need the help too." And you change, and your children change. Now, if you're feeling intimidated, then remember something else. God is there with you, but He's also given you Christian brothers that they're around, and take advantage of them. They're here to advise and help. He's not left you on your own. We rely upon each other. We encourage each other. We help each other in our weaknesses. That does mean you need to be humble enough and open enough to say, hey, here's where I'm struggling. Anybody got some advice? Anybody got an idea on what I could do here? And you share together, and together then we can help our children. We walk together. So if you're feeling a bit intimidated, then get involved with the other men. A good place to start actually is the men's group that meets on Tuesday. That's where you develop these relationships, or talk with myself, anybody of our church leaders. We'll advise you how to get specific direction and learning to walk with God and His people. Why? Because our real goal is that our children are a blessing, that they're both blessed and a blessing to others. And they will be if we're diligent to do what God has given us responsibility for as fathers. And He will enable us to do it.